This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Nantucket took charge of the ship Two Brothers, another whaler, and 5 months from home struck a reef to the westward of the Sandwich Islands. The ship was a total loss, and Paula never went to sea again. At the time of the second wreck, he said, "Now I am utterly ruined. No owner will ever trust me with a whaler again, for all will say I am an unlucky man." He ended his life as the night watch of Nantucket Town, protecting the houses and people in the dock. Owen Chase was always fortunate. In 1832, the Charles Carroll was built for him on Brant Point, Nantucket, and he filled her twice, each time with 2,600 barrels of sperm oil. In his last years, he took to hiding food in the attic of his house. We just made it. 1921, when Raymond Weaver wrote the first biography of Melville, he went to her for materials, and one night they went up in the attic and opened that cake box for the first time, and there was the manuscript of Billy Budd. It was never published until, never known to exist until. I've looked at that manuscript, but I've never made the studies that a man named Freeman in particular and Jay Leiter have made of it. And Freeman published a book on, which you can buy now, I just bought it myself in paper, the paperback edition of Billy Budd is Freeman's edition, originally published by Harvard Press. It's a very interesting study, I think. I reviewed that, by the way, in a piece of prose that's going to be published in this book for Western Review. And I argue a big case there. The title of the piece is called Hawthorne Homosexuality and Hebraism. The title is David Young, David Old, but the real pitch is Hawthorne Hebraism and Homosexuality and Hebraism. Because Billy Budd is a novel of a pretty boy who is loved by a master of arms aboard a ship whose love is scorned by Billy, and the master of arms accuses Billy of being the ringleader of a mutiny aboard the ship. And Billy, who's a completely unflawed apple of cheek and everything else, virtue, but he has one impediment, speech, and as a result, his muscles act faster than his mind, so he clouts Claggett and kills him. So then the captain is stuck with the problem of trying this thing, not only as possibly the mutineer, but actually as a murderer aboard the vessel. So he hangs Billy from a yard arm. It's a parable, allegory, everything else. And I myself think that Freeman's argument that it was originally a short story, and that as a short story it was very powerful. Then Melville decided to try to make it a short novel, which he did. And the manuscript is the second thing, the short novel.
What Redburn?
Redburn is before Moby Dick. You know that book?
Yeah.
It's a knocker.
In relation to Billy.
Yeah. I think not anything of meaning at all, really. Again, by that fact that the whole Hawthorne thing, that whole homosexuality thing, and that whole Hebraic thing is all on the later story. And Redbird is marvelous simply as a story of an American boy of his period who goes to sea and is therefore just shoved right down into the filth of life. And it's called the subtitle of that book is called Redbird, which is the name of the boy, or the story of a gentleman. It's a funny subtitle because the whole story is the bitterness of Melville's having, from his own point of view, fallen due to his father's failure in business in Albany from a social class that he was born into to becoming like in this damn society. I mean, mind you, democracy is an old thing. I think it's a marvelous book. I was in that poem again. Hey Jackson is a smash out of the. Jackson is the claggart of Redburn. There are those kind of fictional relationships between the two books.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you know, is it Maxwell Anderson who did the play of Billy Budd?
You know no, that? No, it's two young men, Louis Cox and who's now at Bowdoin and the guy who's now the head of the theater at Harvard, Robert Chapman. They wrote the play of Billy Budd.
Oh, what do you think of that?
I never saw it. No. Think about it. Never read it either. No, don't know anything about it.
Well, Billy Budd, I know it's been considered by some people as being Melville's peace with the world.
Yeah.
This seems to be kind of ridiculous. I think something, whether you do see this as being a good fit of the older Melville, you know.
Well, when I said in that piece I read that only once did he manage to skip out of that prison of the Semitic notion of transcendence. Believe you me, Melville's problem with God was somewhat an old-fashioned Puritan concept of God. But then Melville is a big psyche, and the old man up there was his own old man, like, and that kind of stuff, and he was wrapped up. And Billy, the interesting thing about Billy is Captain Devere, who again, if John was here, listen to that for truth. Captain Truth of the vessel. And Pa and God and Truth were all authority. And do you know, by the way, if you ever want to get Melville right, where he's younger and less organized in a sense, as he is in Billy. Billy is the only organized sort of a managed, formalized literary achievement, in a sense, yeah. Otherwise, his forms are open forms, but The Lightning Rod Man, a short story by Melville, of a guy who sells lightning rods up and down Berkshires and the Vermont area. You ought to read that, because actually it's clearly Zeus. and the story is just the most wonderful manipulation of allegory again, because the guy is no more than a guy going around from farm to farm up and down these valleys selling lightning rods to farmhouse wives when their husbands are in the field. And it's too much, that story. Another one, by the way, of his is I and My Chimney, which has to do with his house in Pittsfield, which had this chimney, the biggest chimney in New England, I think, still is that one down there. I've been down in the basement of that house, but the basis of it's a pyramid, the chimney, and the basis of the pyramid is almost as wide as the cellar. It starts with a base that you'd never see, and it goes up on an angle through the house. And he writes this, well, a very beautiful scholar on Melville named Seals from Yale, has written the most interesting, almost equal to Lawrence's great passage on the cassock, the chapter called The Cassock and Moby Dick, which is one of the greatest pieces of scholarship. In fact, Lawrence is one of the greatest Melville scholars for having written that chapter alone. Nobody caught on, I think, like Melville, like Lawrence did to what Melville was up to in that chapter called The Cassock. It's a marvelous essay by Lawrence. But Seals on the Chimney is just too much again on this subject of Captain Devere and the Papa, Father, God thing. Here is justice, you know, like the problem of justice in the world. That's Devere's problem. He loves Billy. Billy's his son in the novel. Billy's perfect. He's just the captain of a vessel, but he's got responsibilities. Yeah. So he hangs Billy. And boy, it's a man hanging his own child. There's no question about it. And Melville gets himself a big rise in being hung. You can feel that ending of that thing, which is pure crucifixion, by the way. Stolen right out of it. He's spread-eagled on it. Doesn't he? I think he's hung that way. He's spread-eagled, isn't he? But at least, or he's hung from a yard. I guess he's just hung from a yard on, but
yeah, the sun comes out.
Yeah, the sun is, exactly. It's a resurrection. Big moment, boy.
No, off the topic, but did you see the movie
Sure.
Five.
Oh, sure.
For every test?
Yeah, sure.
A
naturalism. Beg pardon? No. Yeah, but then if you know Houston's movies, like the one I'm always thinking of is rather than the Treasure Sea Armada or the movie Dick is the one with Katharine Hepburn and Bogart on it. The African Queen. Yeah. Or the one he made, Beat the Devil, I think it is. I mean, he's a poor novelist, Houston. He really should have been a writer. He was a writer, you know. Like, and if he'd only had to meet the problem where he really can't get away from trying, I mean, wishing he could, which is in novels, instead of writing, making movies, I think the whole, always the literary is so present that even if he's a novelist movie maker, that dish is the film. Or you feel that statement thing coming in from existentialism. He really is. He's just a guy who admires the Camus and Sartre and that vision of life. And it's hardly, it seems to me, got a goddamn thing to do with Herman Melville, at least.
Do you think there's anyone else in American literature who is anywhere like Melville? I wonder if Crane wasn't sort of influenced by very much.
Yeah, sure.
He tried in the same direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Crane, of course, had the misfortune, in a sense, to be living at the time that naturalism was at its height, like he's one of the great naturalists we have. But then the Blue Hotel is something that makes your skin stand up.
There's a passage in the Blue Hotel that exactly parallels a passage in the Billy Budd. Beautiful connection.
Just think how few years there are between the writing of those two stories. Do you realize that? Correct. Oh, well, so yes. No, it's about 10 to 15 years, but it's a relatively small amount of time. Yeah. It's very close. I've always, or due to Duncan, I've always, ever since I heard Duncan make the most beautiful piece on Gertrude Stein I've ever heard, you realize that Melville was alive until 1892 and writing, 1891, I think, writing right up to the last minute. And the manuscript, one of the manuscripts being Billy Budd. And Miss Stein's Three Lives is 1903. You know, I think it's hard for us to realize that the 19th century is woven into our lives, because we feel Miss Stein or Stephen Crane as being belonging somewhat to us. And Melville sounds, I'm sure, to most everybody as one of those. Oh dear. Even Henry James is closer than Melville.
Science sort of mixes us up with.
Yeah. Well, that's the great date. If I'd mentioned Private Lives, I'd rather have mentioned Three Lives. I'd rather mention Planck's theory is 1901 or 2, isn't it? Maybe even 1897 is that. I stress this only because really I don't think we're disconnected at all. Those little years don't break at all. If the Melville line, if you feel the Melville line, like for example as against Whitman, I think he's a beautiful poet and all that. That sounds light, slurs. Like I honestly, my God, Whitman's just as alive. It's only in that, like only in that other, the things that I've been talking about that Melville seems more, feels to me more relevant.
Do you see any relationship between Conrad and Melville?
Almost none, except the fact that they were both superb seamen once, obviously. I mean, they went to work on the sea, didn't they? Absolutely none whatsoever. Ben and I were up at Maine summer before last, year, and I stayed with an old friend of mine who's a lobster, whose son is a lobster, and in the house we had for a few days, there was a copy of the Nigger of the Narcissus, which I had never read. So I'm really quite fresh on Conrad. I could talk about it. And it's painting. It's got nothing to do with literary art. It's just incredibly good painting. It's like it's better than all sea painting. That's what. Yeah. I mean, storms and.
Have you read Heart of Darkness?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. I've always had the feeling that that's the kind of thing about Conrad that suggested that it's great painting, and yet he was doing more than that. And in this way, I kind of always think there's a relationship.
Every man's it eats, you know, like. Suddenly now that you say it that way, I'm thinking of a man who read in Gloucester the other night. He's been a friend of ours for years, and he's a statistical analysis for Gordon Pugh Fisheries. And I thought Duncan was going to be, and I set up a reading for Duncan, and he never showed up, and I never heard from him. So I was going to go in and read him, and clearly, and the other people in town thought it'd be better if they asked three writers to read their three other writers, and they did. And this guy read a thing called Prologus, chapter two, opening of his novel. And this man believes in Conrad. I mean, has that feeling for Conrad. I suspect Conrad's really his master. And this piece of the novel I'm going to try to get published, it's so crazy good. Like, what is it, you know, isn't it? Who's your man if he's your man? That's the most. These values are really, you know, like, that's literary history and literary criticism. I don't think it relates. For me, Conrad is not at all as interesting. He's psychologically, I think he's a bore of character. Physically, I think he's got the sea in the painting world. You know, these things. And like Mr. Melville turneth me on. That's all.
Huh?
Sure. Oh, tremendous! And if you know Clarel, the novel, or the poem on the death of Hawthorne, the poem called Monody. To have known him, to have loved him, after longness long, and then to be estranged in life, ease me a little, ease my song. And the second stanza is because Hawthorne would died up here. At Crawford Notch, and he's buried there, and he's buried in the snow. And the vine image is the vine that hid the shyest cloistral grape. The imagery of vine and grape. For example, the leading character of Clarel, outside of Clarel, the storyteller, is vine. Melville is a man of such archetypalism, by the way, that again, if we only had that, why didn't he cleanse a person like Chet Nacontes, dopey? Probably spend a whole afternoon on these problems and we can pick it up again. I'm just answering you. Is that the proper nouns like vine and the image shy as cloistral grape are where Melville's where the seams in his psyche that had to do with homosexuality flow like in his lifetime in friendship with towards Hawthorne, they flow right on the same vein out to David and Jonathan, which is the biggest imagery he's got as of the relationship of men. He cries out in the middle of Billy, but I can't use David as my hero because you've all lost touch with the Old Testament, so I got to use Lord Nelson as my image of the authority that De Vere has to use. You know that marvelous passage? Right smack out still in the novel. It's such an angry passage about how completely crippling the condition of man is now that he's lost touch with the Old Testament, which had all that imagery and all that swell and swelter in it of the possibilities of life in a human being.
Was this caused primarily because of his sailing?
Well, I'm sure he got a good. He must have had his He must have had his... No, I don't know. On the contrary. Oh, boy. There's no evidence whatsoever that Hoyman was a homosexual in the active sense. Well, he was... I'm sure, like Billy, he was a very... I describe him in that poem. He was... Don't think Herman wasn't a little beauty. And you don't think a few seamen on board those vessels all those years weren't interested in said fact.
The opening scenes, when he goes to bed with...
Yeah, I think that's always abused in as of the
home.
Yeah, he certainly does. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that one is often abused, that passage in this homosexual thing. There's all this other place that I'm working at the moment to answer Paul is really where it's really true, and where it's much more meaningful, and where Melville was engaged this whole lifetime, crucially. Believe you me, that friendship with Hawthorne is so beautiful simply because once in his life, you know. By the way. Billy Budd is inscribed to Captain John Chase of the main top of the U.S. vessel, the United States, who was Melville's main top captain when Melville was a sailor coming back a year and a half from Honolulu to Boston. And John Chase, John Chase is so obviously the figure of a man whom he really loved, whatever furtherance that love had, one doesn't know. But clearly there was another man beside Hawthorne in his life for whom the whole thing was going, and that was Chase, whom he was an older man than he, by I think about 10 years at the time they were aboard that vessel.
Do you think that society then condoned homosexuality? This would
change
both writing.
Not at all. Absolutely not. I don't believe that social change has anything but superficial effects upon these matters. I think these matters are locked in nature and reality and in life, and I don't even care for a human race that would be removed from them by becoming a new species, personally.
Do you want to take a break and have some coffee?
Oh, it'll be delicious.